Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors. And now I can hear myself since I turned the volume up on my headset. However, this being a holiday weekend, and, you know, being busy all week, the show preparation on my part was, shall we say, limited. So we're just going to do a regular show here this morning, and we're asking you to participate. I know you're just getting up, and you're just getting your coffee, and you can't think straight. Well, I'm in the same boat. It's been a long week. The Maryland Hunting Quarterly came in this week, and I've been delivering across the state. Somebody asked me last night why I was tired, and I said 15 stops in six counties today, which, you know, that's kind of the norm for delivery week. So a lot of driving, a lot of windshield time, a lot of talk radio, a lot of coffee. But, hey, here I am at your service from 5 to 7 on Saturday morning, every single Saturday as usual. Some Saturdays are better than others. Some days we have guests. Some days we don't. But what we always do is offer the phone lines to be open to you and have a conversation with me. And that is very simply accomplished on your end by picking up your phone and pressing the following numbers. 410-WCBM-680. And now I said letters. I said numbers, but there were letters in there. 410-WCBM-680. That's our contact number. If you're outside the local Baltimore area, it is 800-WCBM-680. Now, let me translate that numerically to you in case you're totally confused, like I am most of the time. 410-922-6680, 1-800-922-6680, and the lines are wide open for you to call about anything you've heard about on the news, anything you've seen, anything you'd like to comment on, your fishing adventures, your hunting adventures, your outdoor adventures, your encounters with wildlife. We're more than glad to talk about all of that this morning. So what do you think? What do you think? Well, been an interesting week. Interesting week. If you recall last week, I announced the formation of the Maryland Hunting Coalition, and I've had numerous conversations with a lot of folks from around the state in around that particular event. Sunday hunting was a big talking point this week, and we've actually got the history of Sunday hunting in Maryland going back to 1999 through the present day in the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. Now, if you don't have a copy of it, a hard copy of it, and you have a computer, well, don't despair. You can read the entire Maryland Hunting Quarterly, the summer 2014 issue, online at MarylandHuntingQuarterly.com. There's some opinion in there. There's an article on Sunday hunting. If you recall, Tracy Groves was with us here before the first day of the youth turkey season, and he conducted a youth turkey camp. Remember, he was leaving for youth turkey camp, and the youth turkey guy, the youngsters were pretty successful. We have an update on the Doe Harvest Challenge that we promoted last year. There's an article on trapping coyotes. An article on how to buy a bow, things to look for, how to do a food plot on a budget. And then there's an article, part two of what I call the rabbit ministry, ministering to the folks through rabbit hunting. Our buddy Charles Rodney down in southern Maryland takes folks rabbit hunting as part of an outreach. A couple of deer stories, one about Hoppy and another one about a deer named Earl. A poem by Teresa Grime up in Cecil County about father and son hunting. There's an article about the way of life outdoors, way of life community outdoors by Bob Newton. Bob is a Pope and Young scorer. He is a Boone and Crockett scorer. He scores deer antlers and horns for the Long Hunter Society, which is a muzzleloading group, the Shed Hunters Association. And we have a little dedication to Captain Chris Rosendale, who passed last month. And then Augie Gray, our friend from Carroll County, wrote the second part of the story on how to track a deer. And then, of course, there's the final little article about the Senate Bill 966 in Southern Maryland. So if you're a hunter, there's a lot to read in the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. You can pick up a copy at some of our sponsors here on the show and shops all over the state, actually, from Hancock to Dorchester County. So make sure you try and get a copy of that if you could. Anyway, 410-922-6680 is our phone number, 410-WCBM-680. And we invite your calls on this Memorial Day weekend, please. A lot of talk about crabs and the prices of crabs this week. Understanding there's, you see the signs, soft crabs for sale. Big shed going on in the Chesapeake Bay on the lower part of the bay down near the Virginia line, Tangier Sound, Pocomoke Sound down near Crisfield. Their soft crab season seems to be starting off pretty good. And good news being foretold for summer crabbing. The potters are down there catching a bunch of undersized crabs, but many, many, many of them, according to one of my sources, many undersized crabs, which means they have to go back. They're too small. However, once they shed, you know, once or twice by fall, it looks to me like the crab business will be booming, hopefully. That's not a prediction. That is based on what I've heard from some of the wholesalers and some of the folks in the business. So I hope so. I hope they're right. I hope the prices are down in, you know, in August and September when the crabs are really big and really good. So we'll see. 3 years after the Civil War ended, on May 5th, 1868, the head of an organization of Union veterans, the Grand Army of the Republic, established Decoration Day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the war dead with flowers. Major General John A. Logan declared that Decoration Day should be observed on May 30th. It is believed that date was chosen because flowers would be in bloom all over the country. The first large observance was held that year at Arlington National Cemetery across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. The ceremonies centered around the mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, draped veranda of the Arlington Mansion, once the home of General Robert E. Lee. Various Washington officials, including General and Mrs. Ulysses S. Grant, presided over the cemetery. The ceremonies. After speeches, children from the Soldiers and Sailors Orphan Home and members of the Grand Army of the Republic made their way through the cemetery, strewing flowers on both Union and Confederate graves, reciting prayers, and singing hymns. May 5th, 1868. That was when Decoration Day was established and carried out on May 30th at Arlington, the former home of General Robert E. Lee. Local springtime tributes to the Civil War dead already had been held in various places. One of the first occurred in Columbus, Mississippi, April 25th, 1866, when a group of women visited a cemetery to decorate the graves of Confederate soldiers who had fallen in battle at Shiloh. Nearby were the graves of Union soldiers, neglected because they were the enemy. Disturbed at the sight of the bare graves, the women placed some of their flowers on those graves as well. Today, cities in the North and South claim to be the birthplace of Memorial Day in 1866. Both Macon and Columbus, Georgia claim the title, as well as Richmond, Virginia. The village of Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania, used to go through there all the time, claims it began there 2 years earlier. A stone in Carbondale, Illinois, a cemetery, carries the statement that the first Decoration Day ceremony took place there on April 29, 1866. Carbondale was the wartime home of General Logan. Approximately 25 places have been named in connection with the origin of Memorial Day, many of them in the South, where most of the war dead were buried. Am I boring you yet, or is this okay? I can stop. Your phone call will preclude me from finishing. In 1966, Congress and President Lyndon Johnson declared Waterloo, New York, the birthplace of Memorial Day. There, a ceremony on May 5th, 1866 honored local veterans who had fought in the Civil War. Businesses closed and residents flew flags at half staff. Supporters of Waterloo's claim say earlier observances in other places were either informal, not community-wide, or one-time events. By the end of the 19th century, Memorial Day ceremonies were being held on May 30th throughout the nation. State legislatures passed proclamations designating the day, and the Army and Navy adopted regulations for proper observance at their facilities. Today, by the way, is not May 30th. Today is May 24th. That's my side commentary. Tomorrow is May 25th, and Monday is May 26th. Just so you know, we've made a three-day holiday weekend out of this somber and solemn event of honoring our war dead. It was not until after World War I, however, that the day was expanded to honor those who have died in all American wars. In 1971, Memorial Day was declared a national holiday by an act of Congress, though it is still often called Decoration Day. It was then also placed on the last Monday in May, as were some other federal holidays. I assume meaning placed on Mondays. That was 1971, fully 100 years or more after the first Decoration Day. Some states have Confederate observances. Many southern states also have their own days for honoring the Confederate dead. Mississippi celebrates Confederate Memorial Day on the last Monday of April, Alabama on the fourth Monday of April, and Georgia on April 26th. North and South Carolina observe it on May 10th. Louisiana on June 3rd. Tennessee calls that date Confederate Decoration Day. Texas celebrates Confederate Heroes Day, January 19th, and Virginia calls the last Monday in May Confederate Memorial Day. That would be this coming Monday. General Logan's orders for his post to decorate graves in 1868 with the choicest flowers of springtime urged, "We should guard their graves with sacred vigilance. Let pleasant paths invite the coming and going of reverent visitors and fond mourners. Let no neglect, no ravages of time testify to the present or to the coming generations that we have forgotten as a people the cost of a free and undivided republic." The crowd attending the first Memorial Day ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery was approximately the same size as those that attend today's observance, about 5,000 people. Then, as now, small American flags were placed on each grave. A tradition followed at many national cemeteries today. In recent years, the custom has grown in many families to decorate the graves of all departed loved ones. The origins of special services to honor those who die in war can be found in antiquity. The Athenian leader, Pericles, offered a tribute to the fallen heroes of the Peloponnesian War over 24 centuries ago. That could be applied today to the 1.1 million Americans who have died in the nation's wars. Not only are they commemorated by columns and inscriptions, but there dwells also an unwritten memorial of them, graven not in stone, but in the hearts of men. To ensure the sacrifices of America's fallen heroes are never forgotten, in December 2000, the U.S. Congress passed and President signed into law the National Moment of Remembrance Act, creating the White House Commission on the National Moment of Remembrance. The commission's charter is to encourage the people of the United States to give something back to their country, which provides them so much freedom and opportunity by encouraging coordinating commemorations in the United States of Memorial Day and the National Moment of Remembrance. The National Moment of Remembrance encourages all Americans to pause wherever they are at 3 p.m. local time on Memorial Day for a minute of silence to remember and honor those who have died in service to the nation. As Moment of Remembrance founder Carmela LaSpada says, it's a way we can all help put the memorial back in Memorial Day. 410 WCBM 680 is our phone number. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after this. It's time for the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat motor and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shop or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center and prizes from sponsors like the World Fishing Network and Under Armour. New this year is an invasive species award for those catching blue catfish, flathead catfish, and northern snakeheads. And check out the new Maryland Youth Fishing Club and the Youth Angler's Log to learn how your youngster can win a guided fishing trip. From now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. If you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland citation-sized fish or crab and certify your catch, you're in. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater, tidal rivers, Chesapeake Bay, and on the Atlantic coast that qualify. So stop by your local fishing citation center, check the fishing rule book, or visit www.dnr.maryland.gov for all the details in the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge and the Angler Award Program. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky? For great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, hey, it's Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end, hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island, go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. Custom-tied bucktails and trolling lures for rockfish, and all you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. I'd like to tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're just off Beltway, exit number 9. You can go there and find anything and everything you need for fishing, and that's any kind of fishing. Whether you want to fish for freshwater trout or saltwater striped bass, whether you want to fish for panfish, for white perch, for crappie, for anything like that, you're certainly find what you need. And the folks to help you with that at Clyde Sports Shop. Now, if you've broken the rod tip off your rod, they can replace it. If you've broken one of your guides on your rod, they'll replace that. If your reel's not working right, they'll fix it. That's just one of the few services they are, one of the many services they have at Clyde Sports Shop, including full gunsmithing services. So now's the time to get your firearm in there, get it cleaned up. Don't wait till 2 days before the season and rush it in there and say, "Oh, I need an emergency repair." No. Do it now. They also carry a full line of firearms for home protection, personal protection, and hunting, and as well as the shooting sports as well. And they like to sell the Brownings as well, the BPS pump, the Maxxis shotgun, the A5, the Satori sporting shotgun for sporting clays and shooting sports. Check it out at Clyde Sports Shop, 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. The website is clydesports.com, and the fishing hotline for the fishing report is 247-FISH, 247-FISH. Let's talk to Rob on Tillman Island. Good morning, Rob. How you doing?
Good morning. How you doing this morning?
What's up?
Just had a question for you. The recent ASMSC meeting that they had, DNR made an announcement that there could be, and more likely there's going to be, a reduction in the coastwise harvest of a 30% reduction. The question I had to you was, is that in a letter that DNR has put out, they mentioned that a specific Chesapeake Bay reference point through the ASMFC was supposed to be reached so that, you know, we can, you know, kind of work with them on this reduction in this possible, quote, rockfish problem there is. I was just wondering that in the letter it says that a specific Chesapeake Bay reference point was not reached, and in turn we have to go by the coastal reference point, which the coastal fleet and the Chesapeake Bay fleet are going to have to abide by. I was just, you know, curious, in your opinion, do you think it's fair that, you know, being that we have our own unique ecosystem here in the Bay, that since this consensus wasn't reached, and what reason for, who knows, that we should abide by the coastal regulations for the reduction of these striped bass in the Bay here?
Interesting set of questions. What I believe is pretty much unimportant in the overall management of the Chesapeake Bay striped bass.
Right.
They are coastal fish. They are a fish that comes here to spawn. We do have that standing as a unique estuary. You're absolutely right. Because they come here to spawn, they are selectively targeted primarily by recreational fishermen in their spawning season, starting the first of March on the Upper Bay in the Susquehanna Flats. They're targeted through the early, the middle of April through basically the middle of May. The target's on the back of the big spawning fish.
Right.
And this year the spawn, I believe, was late. That meant that more spawning fish were taken out of the system by recreational fishermen. Millions and millions and billions of eggs were dumped in the garbage when those fish were caught and
Correct.
Killed and filleted. So to answer your question, should the Chesapeake Bay watermen and Chesapeake Bay anglers be dictated by what happens on the coast? If we don't have the numbers, what do we point to as the best science? I mean, these fish come in here, they spawn, and then they go up the coast. The Atlantic Right. States Marine Fisheries Commission deals with all the coastal states.
Right.
So you've got fish that are on their way here that are being targeted in North Carolina. You got fish that are on their way in the mouth of the bay being targeted at the Bay Bridge Tunnel in Virginia. You got
Right.
the fish that are targeted here in the May season. They leave here, they go up the coast, and they continue to be targets of anglers, recreational and commercial anglers, up and down the East Coast. In the fall, the same thing happens, you know, up and down. And,
Right.
you know, so you know, it is pretty much the same population of fish, and I honestly don't know how to answer your question. What do you see as a remedy?
Well, I mean, first of all, the major issue that concerns me is that they're putting out there a 30% reduction is what they are there now.
Now, is this in both commercial and recreational harvest?
It's across the board.
Okay.
It's across the board.
That makes sense. So I can
Right.
I can see a reduction in the recreational harvest. I can see the recreational season starting 2 weeks earlier or 2 weeks later, let's say, and eliminating that stupid catch and release season on the flats. And I'm a
Right.
recreational angler. I just don't think you should be targeting those big fish when they come in to spawn. I mean,
Right.
look.
Well, you know,
look,
the thing is that concerns me, Alan, is that certain special interest groups, and they'll go name unmentioned, have proposed that, you know, the issue is, and you know as well as I do, there's an accountability problem. And where the accountability problem there arises is that in the commercial side, there is accountability. On the charter boat side, which I participate in, there is extreme accountability. But on the recreational side, there is very variable accountability. I mean, it's a random phone survey call-in type of thing, which, you know, I mean...
Well, there's also the dockside survey, though, Rob. I mean,
Right.
I'm not picking on what you said, but, you know, the department spends a huge amount of man-hours and time at the popular docksides where the commercial boats come in, as you know. Now,
Right.
obviously, if the commercial boats are coming in there, the recreational boats are coming in there. There's, you know, they're not going to go... They're not going to go to some private boat dock and you know stand there and wait for somebody to show up. They're going to go where the commercial fleet leaves in the morning and comes back at noon and you know check all the fish.
Right.
So but if you're I mean, if that's what you're talking about with the charter boat accountability I see that.
As far as the accountability, I mean, with a charter boat, you know, we've got daily reports we've got to fill out.
That's right.
They know how many fish we caught, where we caught them,
right.
the weight of them, and on top of that, they know how many fish we have thrown back
right.
and the weight of the fish we've thrown back.
Right.
But what really concerns me that certain special interest groups have announced, and I'm not trying to
scare
anybody, of a one fish per person reduction. Well, what concerns me about that is that when they do this, and they are mandated by law, federal and state, if they are going to do this reduction, and there is an implementation, they have to do an economic impact study.
Right. And
what really concerns me, there's a lot of options that can be explored to how to get this, 30% reduction. You know, you're aware of years ago we had the cutoff size in the fish.
Right.
You know, we could take them from, I think it was 28 to 30, was it 34?
Yeah, the slot limit, which was hated by charter boat captains, by the way.
Right.
Hated.
And it worked.
But sure it worked.
To do this, to possibly explore the idea of going to a one fish per person, the economic impact on this would be absolutely devastating, not only to the charter industry, to tourism, but it would be, extremely devastating also to the recreational people too. And what concerns me is if they're going to do this or even think about it, and this is where I guess my main point I'm getting to, I would implore the state of Maryland to do a extensive economic impact study, not just go to a couple restaurants or a couple tackle shops, but go to hotels, motels, restaurants, gas stations, the big box stores, the mom-and-pop tackle stores, the mom-and-pop stores, all these places, and do an extensive economic impact study just to see what will happen. Because, I listen to your show, and, you've got the Maryland Fishing Challenge, promoting fishing in Maryland.
Right.
Bringing in tax revenue, bringing in money for the state. Well, it would be I'm telling you, in my business, if I had to go to one fish, and I'm speaking for myself and no other charter boat captain on this bay, if I had to go to one fish, 90% of my business would be out the window the first week.
Let me ask you this, Rob. Somewhere in the middle, there's got to be some kind of compromise or some kind of agreement that everybody can live with. Now, I was speaking to some commercial guys the other day, and they said, our hook and line quota is about to be cut. And he said, and it's because of the downturn in the population of the striped bass, or at least that's the felt message.
But specifically, the 9-year brooding females that they're not finding up off of Massachusetts. That is the whole problem in a nutshell, right?
Yes,
there.
Correct. Okay. So, the commercial guy said to me, who is catching the bulk of the spawning fish and taking them out of the Chesapeake Bay? It is not the commercial watermen. They don't even have a season.
They cannot target them. That is a good
That's right. They do not have a season. And frankly, those great big cows are not the best to eat.
No.
Okay? But you're going to put them in the cooler. You're going to take a picture. You're going to take them. You're going to fillet them. You're going to steak them or do whatever. People are going to eat them. Okay? But quite frankly, I'd rather have one about 18 inches, if I'm going to eat one,
correct.
Like everybody else. Okay.
I agree.
Okay. So, the question is, what is the trade-off? That big build-up to that May trophy season where we've got giant fish that people like to catch? Or do you say, let's do the best we can do to protect the resource? This year, when we opened the season on April 19th, the report was the bulk of the fish hadn't spawned. Even into the first and second week of May, we were still finding a quarter to a third of those fish hadn't spawned. All has to do, everybody said, it has to do with photo period, it has to do with this, it has to do with water temperature, this and that and the other thing. I would rather the department err on the side of caution and say, just to be a little bit safer, we may not catch as many fish, but let's move that starting date to May 1st or
right.
first Saturday in May or whatever that might be, just to protect those fish that will have spawned and left the bay. Now, what would the charter boat captains do? They would cry. They would say, you've taken 2 weeks out of the best 2 weeks of our livelihood away. And you just say, I don't know how to address that. What do you say? You're a charter boat captain. What would you say to that? First Saturday in May, you're going to protect them for 2 more weeks. What would you say?
I think that you hit on one point. And the point is that.
And the other thing is Virginia has to step up. And Virginia has to limit that fishery at the Bay Bridge Tunnel in this November and December, okay?
And February.
And North Carolina has to step up. So, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has to look at this big picture and say, you've got these commercial interests and you've got these laws and these rules and this state does this and that state does that. So how do we treat it as you started out asking me, should Chesapeake Bay have special consideration? Of course, we have to deal with the fish as a coastal species, but we can protect that species here in the Chesapeake Bay at its most vulnerable point when the big fish are here and spawning.
Yeah, and I do agree, because it is in statistics that 80% of the coastal population does reproduce in the waters of the Chesapeake Bay.
Sure.
And that time of the year. But, I mean, with technology that we have nowadays, Alan, and with the science that we have nowadays, yes, you hit on a very important point. And the one point is, and I express my concerns to individuals at DNR, and just to let you know, with no return answer, but I'd express my concerns about saying that, hey, guys, my first day out fishing, we had our fish. Every fish that I had in the boat, the 6 fish that I kept, were all gravid females, and they were all 11-hour fish. They were all ready to spawn.
Right, exactly.
Last year, we had maybe 2 or 3. I didn't catch my first buckfish until about the 4th or 5th day.
Right. Let me ask you this, Rob, a question. Is that typical? I mean, are we right on time with the spawn, or was the spawn late this year?
The spawn, I'm figuring, by looking at the water temperature and records that I've kept and other people up and down the bay that I work with have kept, that we were probably 2.5 to 3 weeks behind in the season by the water temperatures and how the fish were. Because this year, as everybody knows, in Virginia, they had one of the worst seasons ever in the winter season out of Virginia Beach.
Mm-hmm.
The fish went south. They went out deep. I mean, they had that tournament down there where I think like over 100 boats competed, and then like 2 fish were caught.
Right.
A lot of charter captains out of Chesapeake Beach went down and turned around and came back home because they weren't catching fish. So you had a big influx of your spawning fish coming, but the water temperatures were a lot cooler this year. The second weekend of April, and I said that DNR has the ability to be able to regulate this, but I think that there was pressure once again from special interest groups.
Are you talking about organized recreational fishing groups?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
There was pressure from them, because there were some tournaments that were conducted opening day of the season and later on in the season that would,
sure.
kind of hurt them a little bit. But so it's become a political issue. But
that is the problem. You've got the commercial interest, you've got the recreational interest, and then you've got the charter interest. Now, is that, and I've always asked this question, nobody's ever been able to answer it, is the charter industry commercial or recreational, or both?
Well,
or both?
If you look at the legal end of it,
yeah.
I mean, you look at the legal end of it, this year something different was done, and I'm sure every charter captain in the Bay does realize it. When we went to purchase last year, when we went to purchase our charter boat stickers, and
mm-hmm.
One for 6 and one for over 6.
Right.
It was issued, and it was just put on your license as your sticker. This year, that sticker was issued as a license, a commercial license in its own, when you got that sticker this year for your charter boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, what's, I asked the girls in Centerville, what's this number for? Oh, well, this is actually a commercial license now. It's considered a license, the sticker. So, I mean, but to participate, the best scenario or the best explanation that I can come up with a charter boat is that to be in the charter boat business, number one, you have to have a Coast Guard license. Number two, you have to have a form of a PFL, whether it is a unlimited TFL or a partial TFL or a TFL that has a guide's license on it.
Right.
So what I tell everybody, and I explain
TFL is title fishing license, by the way.
Title fishing license. Right. What I explain to them, and people ask you, are you commercial? Are you recreational?
Right.
We are a commercial business. This is my opinion. I'm not speaking for every charter boat.
Right, I understand that.
But my opinion is we are a commercial enterprise participating in a recreational fishery.
Correct. That is correct. Now, let me ask you one more question.
To get at the point, when I file my taxes, I don't file them as a farmer, as a plumber, as an electrician, as a welder, at a part-time,
right.
a retired fireman. I file them as a commercial fisherman.
Right.
And 90% of my income is generated from charter fishing. I do some hook and lining, minimal on that.
Sure.
But it's charter fishing, so that when I file, I'm filing as a commercial fisherman. But a lot of the charter boat captains, they're scared to death of this division that is being driven upon us
by
special interest groups,
organized
recreational fishing groups, trying to separate us.
And, right.
And it's a real touchy issue to get into, Alan. But the thing is,
it's touchy. But we're not afraid of touchy here, and we'll take all comers. And I will admit I don't know enough about the science to. But you apparently are weighing in from the commercial charter boat industry. I want to hear from recreational fishermen. What we have to face throughout all this is the science, the management of this resource based on the best science available.
Right. And
are we getting it, Rob? Or are we being driven by recreational opinion, commercial opinion, and the political winds that blow in both directions?
I would have to say, Alan, and this is I want to separate that. Because if you make the comment that you're being driven by recreational interests and charter interests, it increases that division. What the problem in there lies is that there are political facets, up and down the coast and in the state of Maryland, that politics has become such an issue in this fishery that science is taking a second seat.
So what do the fishery managers do? How do they do their job? Do they report the data and then they say this is the data, and then the recreational group goes, well, that can't be right, and the commercial guy goes, well, that can't be right.
Right.
Okay. So we're doing what we do with our biologists. We're doing as many surveys and studies as we can on population.
Right.
We're doing our dockside service. What more can be done on the science side?
Well,
and the interrelation between all the states and all the data that is brought in. You're talking about the commercial guys are under, they're under regulations, they're under scrutiny. The recreational guys are the ones that are the voluntary reporting, that type of thing.
Right.
The charter boat guys, their numbers are cut and dried because they're under such a microscope.
Right.
So where do we get the best numbers?
Well, I mean, one thing that I'm seeing right now, and it started, I guess, last year. Now, that our Young of the Year index is great right now.
Right.
The past two have been great. But visual inspection is what I call, the visual inspection factor of the fish. Now, I've got several good friends of mine that are commercial fishermen in the lower bay.
Right.
And we were down there the other day, went out on the boat with them to do some videotaping.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of striped bass, now I'm talking stripers from 6 inches to the bulk of them, I'm going to say 90%, are between like the 8-inch range to 16-inch range.
Okay.
That are in these pound nets.
Right.
That are catching menhaden.
Right.
Specifically for their stationary fisheries. It would absolutely blow your mind. I mean, in probably 2 days that we filmed, there was probably 40,000 pounds in each net that we, fish weren't handled.
Right. They had to be released, sure.
And they swam out. And last year it was the same way. What concerns me is that the biomass in this bay, and DNR hasn't addressed, and they haven't addressed this, and I hate to say it, they haven't. The biomass in this bay in the past 5 years, I've been on this bay for like 45 years.
Right.
is changed so much in the past 5 years. I mean, 30 years ago, year around then, we didn't see the cow nose rays like we have them today.
That's correct.
We didn't have...
And the big bluefish runs, I mean, to the point where they were having the $25,000 bluefish tournaments and that type of thing. Sure.
And we had the bluefish here. We don't have them now. Now we've got the cow nose rays. We didn't have the amount of puppy drum and red drum in the bay 10 years ago that we have. We have a wintering stock. You've got other species that are coming into the bay. And what I think where the department misses a lot of this issue is the amount of fish that are in this bay right now. Being a fisherman myself, seeing breaking fish. I mean, I saw breaking fish a week ago.
Right.
That's like unheard of this time of year.
Sure.
I'm seeing so many small fish. What scares me is that we're going to have a bio crash, and things have to be done. I don't think right now, and this is why, you know, I called you, is that our ecosystem that we have here in the bay is like nothing that is on the East Coast. I think the department really needs to take a good, hard look at that and see, yes, sure, the coastal fishery problem up in Massachusetts, they're not catching the big fish. Well, the majority of their problem is they've got a 28-inch fish. I have good friends that fish out of Chatham, Falmouth, Yarmouth, up on the Cape. I go up there and fish. These guys, people don't understand. It's like here in Maryland. If you're chumming like up on Hickory Thickets or Love Point, where I fish for years, in the summer when it gets warm, you'll go through 100 fish to keep five. You know, you got 16, 17-inch fish. You're catching them, throwing back. Same thing up on Cape Cod. They need a 28-inch fish to catch. They're catching loads of 26, 25, 27-inch fish. Some of them are catching 20 fish.
So what you're saying is if they lower the limit to 24 inches, let's say, then those people will take their limit and go home and quit catching these fish.
There would be less impact and less mortality, and do it for a couple years to see if it works. The fact is, the fish are there. Tom O'Connell, he has done an exemplary job, and I will give him kudos on this. I know we commercial people have issues with him, but by not implementing this 30% reduction that these interest groups wanted him to do right out of the gate, because he is the chairman of the Striped Bass Committee on ASMSC, he saw that, you know, whoa, this is going to be a violent, violent economic impact. And he did a great job in doing that. But I think also Tom needs to look and maybe do some things in this fishery that we are a fishery that like no other on the coast.
Rob, we got to leave it there.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well,
I got to take a break.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. And you're welcome to call anytime, Rob. We've spent most of this hour talking with you. And I think that, no, seriously, I think that the issue that you bring up is vitally important. And I think you've stated your case very well, and you've put some things out there for all of us to think about, and, you know, the fishery service as well. So I'm sure they.
If I can say in closing, Alan, is the economic impact of this reduction needs to be extremely, extremely, extremely looked at, because you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
You got it. Okay.
So I thank you very much, sir.
Well said. Thanks, Rob. Take care. Bye-bye. There he goes. 410-WCBM 680, 410-922-6680 is our phone number. Wow. Time for me to tell you about Chesapeake Outdoors. And if you want to catch one of those rockfish that's out there, you're certainly welcome to do that. It's legal to do, and Chesapeake Outdoors has all the rods and reels and tackle and line. They'll wind line on your trolling rod and reel. They'll take care of that for you, and they got a huge selection of live bait and frozen bait. Live bait and frozen bait for any type of fishing in the Chesapeake Bay and in the freshwater region of the Eastern Shore. The Chesapeake Outdoors has Kent Island's largest selection of hunting, fishing, and crabbing supplies. And crabbing season's right around the corner. It's going to get warm. The crabs are going to start coming up. The locusts have bloomed, and you can go crabbing. They've got crab baits and crab traps and crab pots and crab steamers and crab seasoning and you name it. They've got the Bubba Blade knives, and if you want to get ready for bow season, of course, they've got all the major brands, including the Matthews and Mission crossbows, Parker and Barnett crossbows as well. So Chesapeake Outdoors, where are they located? Route 50 East, just after you cross the Bay Bridge, it's exit 39B, Dominion Road, 39B, Dominion Road, on Ken Island. 410-604-2500, 604-2500. The guys there all fish. They all hunt. If you have a special need, they can help you and direct you right to where you need to go as far as that's concerned. So stop by to the first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers, Chesapeake Outdoors, 410-604-2500. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex at Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Your favorite radio station, Talk Radio 680 WCBM, is now available on your iPhone and Droid. Check us out at WCBM.com.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars
and drive them old trucks.
Make them be doctors and lawyers and such. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. They'll never stay home, they're always alone, even with someone they love. Cowboys ain't easy.
Sounds pretty good for an 81-year-old guy, doesn't it?
81. Still doing it.
I'm not 81, no. No, he wasn't 81 when he recorded it. But he's still going strong as far as I know. Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that guy put in his system, I'm sure he's well-preserved. No doubt. Folks, I had a great dinner the other night. I went and ate some crabs. And ate crabs with the crab-eating champion of the entire world. That's right. Fella grew up here in Baltimore and became world champion when he lived in Levittown, Pennsylvania. What do you think of that? Guy's name is Bob Scherer, S-C-H-E-R-R. 67 crabs in 1 hour. And I found a new technique. I had a new technique demonstrated to me on how to take care of eating a crab in a very short amount of time and pick it clean. I will tell you, I was impressed. I was very impressed. We're going to demonstrate that with photos and a step-by-step method in the next Maryland Loves Crabs coming out next month. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Very enjoyable meal, crabs. Crabs are okay. Hard shells. I mean, thick, hard shells. And I asked somebody about that. Why did we have crabs that were so hard to crack? Why were the shells so thick? Well, I'll toss that out to you as listeners. If you've had that problem, let me know what you think. Or if you're an expert in the crab world, let me know what you think. I had one opinion from somebody who deals with thousands of bushels of crabs a week, one of the commercial entities that told me what he thought. So we'll see. Now, of course, they weren't Maryland crabs. Crabs either came from Texas or Louisiana, which is where most of the crabs that you get this weekend are going to come from. Texas, Louisiana, North Carolina, Virginia, perhaps. Maryland crabs right now are starting to show signs of improvement, as I noted earlier. But, commercial guy out there with 300 pots in the water catching about 4 bushels of crabs, mixed crabs, that's about as successful as you're going to get. And trust me, I deal with a lot of the commercial folks. I deal with a lot of the seafood wholesalers. I deal with a lot of folks with very strong opinions and very, very, very many years of experience in this business. So I deal with them on a daily basis as I go around and talk about Maryland Loves Crabs, the Maryland Loves Crabs magazine. So that being said, I'm going to trust what those fellows that have been doing it a lot longer than me and deal with many, 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 many more bushels of crabs than I do and are seriously involved in the crab business. So I'm going with what they tell me. I think that's probably best. So there we go. We don't really have much time to take a phone call right now. What do we got? About a minute left at that? Maybe. So we're going to say this. You got plenty of time to share your opinion. We're on the air for another hour next next hour from 6 to 7. You heard almost a half hour of a recreational commercial charter boat captain who has a commercial license but is involved in the recreational fishing community. He had some comments about those people who are organized recreational fishermen. And you guys can, you can wear your own hat today if you want. We welcome your opinion. We welcome your voice. So you can get on the line at 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680, or 800-922-6680. And once the news is over, we'll go right to your phone calls. Email address is ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. Getting some interesting emails, too. Ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. And